This is Empower the Spirit with Dr. Douglas Kelly.
Hello and good evening for a Sunday, October 9th, 2011. This is Doug Kelly. I'm so glad you could join me this evening for our live show. Now tonight, we're going to introduce a bit of a new format to the show. Instead of running a little bit longer than an hour, we're going to keep the show to an hour, and Dr. Vicki Hunter and I are going to kind of combine things a little bit. So this is how it's going to work. In order to try to keep things a little more concise, we're going to the first half hour or so, 25 minutes or so, I'm going to take the lead on, but Dr. Vicki will be with me. And then at the bottom of the hour, Camille Edwards will be doing her segment, Living Free. It'll be about a five-minute segment on herbology and related things. And then the remainder balance of the hour, Dr. Vicki will take the lead, and I will be there along with her. And so we'll have different topics that we will discuss on each different segment, if you will. And so tonight we start this new format, so tonight's show will be 1 hour. Of course, you can call in if you'd like to ask questions. The numbers are on your screen, 714-459-3973. You can also ask questions in the chat room if you're listening to the live broadcast. And we do welcome those who are here listening live, as well as those listening to the archive. We also, of course, have Reverend John Hightower here to take your calls and screen them, and if you do call in. So, that having been said, let's introduce Dr. Vicki Hunter.
Well, good evening, everyone. Glad to be here, and I'm excited about this new format, Doug. I think it's going to work really well. I'm excited.
And so, you know, we'll basically take the best of what we were doing with the longer format and just condense it a bit, but the same things are still there, the same opportunities. If you'd like to call in during Dr. Vicki's segment for psychic advice, you can do that. And, you know, same thing. So it'll be good.
You have a guest tonight. I'm very excited. I'm looking forward to this evening.
Me too. And tonight we have Dr. Ingrid Irwin with us from Australia Down Under. Dr. Ingrid Irwin, in my opinion, and I've told her this many times, is one of the world's foremost leading experts on electronic voice phenomena, EVP. She's a former Paranexus board member and just a sweet gal. Ingrid, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's very nice to be here.
Yep. Always excited. Always nice to have. Of course, Ingrid has been was on Paranexus Universe radio program many times, and we talked many times. And so tonight we're going to talk a little bit about EVP research, but the consciousness connection. Now, Ing, you got into EVP research not through the typical channels, like through the paranormal community. You came into it a different way. You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. My side of it was more a study of consciousness. At the time, I was actually studying metaphysical science during my doctoral, and now, I didn't have at all really any sort of talking to spirits or ghosts type of mentality, you might say. But I did come across one day, just researching a computer, the EVP, electronic voice phenomena, and found it to be something that was really quite fascinating in the sense that I was looking at consciousness in the extension of the survival hypothesis that we survive, there is no death, that we survive as an energy. Mm-hmm. But I was never greatly psychically connected, you might
say.
So I always, right through my whole study and et cetera, there was nothing I could ever say that gave me a direct personal experience to say that, you know, my consciousness was going to live on, per se, after this physical life. So when I came across electronic voice phenomena, which was not even really known in Australia at that time, it was quite large in America after the movie White Noise, but not so here, that gave me a thought process that sort of said to me, well, okay, I'm not psychically gifted. I probably am not going to get the feedback that would give me the direct experience of my consciousness, or that consciousness survives after the physical death. But EVP gave me an avenue, a gateway, in a sense, to actually to get some sort of direct experience. So that's how I sort of combined the study of consciousness studies and then started to go into the EVP, which led down all sorts of avenues, you might say. But the main thing was it did in the end, well, actually on my very first recording, gave me direct experience of the fact that there seems to be a subtle energy that can communicate on a recorder, which obviously sort of changes your whole belief system also.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I sort of basically went into EVP, not through ghost hunting and groups, but basically through the study is, do we exist? Can we exist after we physically transition? And the secondary question is, can we then communicate back to the physical?
Yeah, and that's interesting, and it's interesting that I never quite knew that until recently, as much as we've talked in the past, but it's a fascinating direction to approach it from. So let's kind of step through what you found. So you start recording, you're doing your recording.
I went through the process, found out all about it, got my recorder, spent 2 weeks with the recorder sitting on my office desk. Basically, she probably paranoid to turn it on thinking, if I get a voice, what if? If I don't get a voice ever, what if? So it was a real double-edged sword. But one day I had the bravery to actually turn it on. So I turned it on, and at that stage we were using it on a voice activation, which means if people aren't sure of it or haven't delved into it, a little red light on the recorder will blink whenever it picks up on something acoustic. So basically, I set it on the desk and I asked the question, and I don't know why I said this, but I just asked the question, I'm here, ready for you. That's all I said, and just let it go. Within about 2 seconds, it started blinking, the little voice activation.
Huh.
On play, but I didn't hear anything in my office, but I watched this little blinking light and thought, oh, okay. On playback, there's a male voice that says, for what?
Huh.
And that was my very first recording. From that process onwards, I was hooked. I was off and running.
You think, wow.
Yes.
You know, okay.
Yeah. It really was a direct answer to what I had just said.
Mm-hmm.
Well, what are you here for? What do you want? And then from that point onwards, I was off and running and started to just start recording at all sorts of different times of day. And occasionally, EVPs are very fickle area to research. You can go weeks, if not months, with nothing, and then you can get a voice capture or a 2 or 3 voice captures in one hit. There's really no rhyme or reason to it.
Hmm.
But it certainly gave me a direct experience that there is something here that is some sort of subtle energy that can communicate or imprint itself onto the recorder.
And so as you continue to record, you've of course made some associations with others around the world. And
yep.
Partners, if you will, recording partners, research partners.
Yeah, and luckily they were sort of people that were the same as me. They were more questioning what is after the physical life. Is there a non-physical energy? Can subtle energy communicate with us? We weren't really a ghost hunting paranormal mm-hmm. group per se. We were just a group of one in Europe, one in America, and myself in Australia that we would record and then just email back and forth or talk and refer our findings and what we were seeing.
Yeah, and so as you continue this, and you did this for several
yep.
years, and mm-hmm. what can you tell us some of the more significant captures you got?
It was really interesting because we tend to get different captures in the sense that for myself, I tended to get younger, almost children or younger voices. They can be male or female, but I tended to, for some reason, I've got quite a few childlike voices. Another researcher, he lives on his own and he gets more female voices. So it doesn't seem to be any rhyme or reason to it. Some of them have a singing melody type to them. I know that sounds probably a little strange, but it's almost like the voice actually hums and sings the words rather than actually speaks them. Trying to think what other... And we have basically two types. What we noticed as researchers worldwide, two types of voices. We'd either get a observational type voice or what we'd get is a... How would I place it? More a reactive, non-interactive sort of voice.
Non-interactive or interactive?
Non-interactive, sorry. So okay. we get voices that were similar to observant, where they seem to be making comments about what we were doing in our environment.
Okay.
And then the flip side was we'd get what we would term more emotional, where in the words seemed quite self-obsessed, emotional. What other words would I use? Uneven, irregular, sometimes accentuated sort of voices. So there tended to be this sort of cut between the two.
Interesting. There's a question in the chat room kind of related.
Yep.
Camille asks, are the locations where you find these voices where a deceased person has lived?
I've recorded in two brand new properties and homes and recorded voices. So I don't think it's so much that it's a voice or a person trapped in that sort of point. I've recorded in new buildings, new places, in the middle of paddocks, down by rivers, you know, all sorts of places. But mainly, most of my recording I do in our studio in a controlled atmosphere, so we don't sort of move around and go to cemeteries or anything like that.
I know why you're giggling. Okay. So, and then here's another quick one, kind of related. How many languages have you picked up on your...
Actually, I've only picked up mainly English and one that was a female voice that later on was identified as Spanish.
Okay, interesting. All right, so...
But generally all might have been English, yes.
So you got a variety of different types of communications, but you also had an interesting... one, because and let's just go into Kathy's question, because this is going to branch into an incident I know you had with your dogs. Mm-hmm. Her question is, I understand that Ingrid did numerous recordings while sleeping and was unable to capture anything. Did she mm-hmm. find any correlation between being awake or asleep while recording? Could it be our own thoughts being picked up while awake?
I did extensive sleep recording research. I never picked up anything. A lot of snoring and a dog snoring. Very boring listening back to, you know, 3 or 4 hours every night, but nothing. And I did it at all different times of night, so I would schedule maybe 30 or 40 recordings between 12 and 1. Then we would change from 1 to 2 and so forth and so forth. Nothing. The idea that thoughts could be placed onto the recorder is one that a lot of researchers are sort of talking about. It is hugely possible. The hard part in our side to sort of get our head around is that we get male voices, we get female voices, we get child voices, we get old voices, we get foreign languages. We sometimes get voices that are two females, one male, that say a sentence in such perfect unison that we're actually picking up 3 to 4 people.
Hmm.
And so that becomes a little hard to say, is it just my thought process being transferred onto a recorder?
Well, it could be if you're schizophrenic, right?
Maybe, but I hope I'm not.
Are you? Am I? No.
Fingers crossed. No.
Yeah.
You know, the amount, and we've even had, I've actually got sort of like a sonic sound, where you would almost say it sounds like dolphins or whales, that sonic underwater sound being picked up at certain spots. There's so many little curious points to it that you sort of have to doubt whether we would be transferring that much variety
right.
from just my mind onto a recorder.
So the question is, if a tree falls in the forest and nobody's there, does it make a sound almost? In other words...
Mm.
If there's nobody there, do EVPs occur?
Yes.
And how do you know that? This is your story.
My story was, that was a really good point, and unattended recordings was what we would term it as a group. We would try out different unattended recordings. I actually was at the vet with my dog, having him put down. He was very old. He was nearly 17, so he had a wonderful life with us. But I'd actually set my recorders to turn on and off at a certain time every day, so I actually never had any interaction with the recorders. So they were just on automatic turning on, turning off type thing. Well, because of the situation we were having with our dog, I didn't even think of the recorder. So we ran in, we went to the veterinary office, he had to be put down. when I came back home, I didn't play back that recording for a few days. When I did, there was a male and a female voice making a comment that he's moved on, which he's gone now, and he was euthanized at 10:20, and the one that said that he is gone now was at 10:25.
Wow.
So that sort of threw a whole spanner in our works, because we had never recorded a voice or voices when we weren't there. So we were sort of thinking, okay, we're part of the whole process of these communications happening. But to have that happen, and I had a secondary one 2 weeks later where I went out again, I just popped out shopping or something and had the recorders all on, and that picked up voices in the house. They were very interested because they were making a comment, there he is. There's a male voice saying, there he is. There's a female voice saying, we must take him. And then there's another voice, there he is. And it was a long capture, and it went over about a two-minute period of these different voices and then nothing.
Huh. And they were referring to whom again?
Well, the only person that organism that had lived in the house that had passed on was our dog at that time.
Okay.
So whether they were coming along to take him, I have no idea. I don't like to make presumptions about it, but there was actually on that second occurrence 2 weeks later. Then, since then, I haven't had voice captures unattended.
So John has a question. How would it be possible for thoughts to transfer to the recorder, if in fact they do?
Well, it'd have to be some sort of PK or phenomena happening. It's not something I reside to because of my own personal experience. I think it's more the skeptics and everything that start to go along the lines is that it's some sort of induced PK thing, something that we're doing we don't know about in our subconscious.
And PK for the audience is psychokinetic, short for psychic. Go ahead.
So somehow I have no idea how this would fathomly work, that I am transferring my thoughts onto the recorder unintentionally, which I find really hard when you start to look at the content of what is being said, to think that I would have that ability.
So that gets us into the consciousness connection. So after your research, I mean, it's not necessarily over, but I know you've gotten away from it a little bit for a short time. But what have you come to? What conclusions or concepts or theories or hypotheses have you come to so far?
Well, there definitely is a non-physical energy, some sort of subtle energy that can communicate from non-physical to physical. We like to use the words in our research non-physical and physical. So there definitely is a portion of consciousness that is communicating, even to the point where we would say that some of the consciousness where we're getting such different types of voice captures that not all of them necessarily seem to be, let's say, a deceased person and their consciousness is coming back for some reason and they're leaving a message on a recorder. We're also getting these observational voices, which are a couple of different voices, male or female. Sometimes even they don't even seem like they are male or female. They're almost like the voices on top of each other that are making comments about what we're doing. So there seems to be an energy or a consciousness that does communicate back into the physical. For me, that means, you know, we survive. We keep moving forward. One of them where I had was I was playing with my dog, and I had the voice recorders on, and on one of them you can hear a little girl in the background saying, that's funny. Another one, we had a young boy, and it sounds like it was right at the door, studio door, and he's just standing there. There's a bang and a crackle, and then all you can hear is him saying, I'm a boy. So there seems to be some that are trying to get some sort of acknowledgement, and there's others that are actually coming through and observing us and what we are doing. So there is an energy, a subtle energy, or a part of our consciousness that is definitely communicating back into the physical.
So that's as much as convinced you that the consciousness survives the death of the physical body in a coherent fashion?
Yes. Yeah. But I don't know how much more we can get to sort of... I think it's more of a case of saying, you know, we're always debating, do we survive, do we not? I think with these sorts of EVP research that we have to actually say, consciousness, there is something surviving. It's just a matter now of going that next step with our research. which doesn't seem to sort of be happening yet, but I think, you know, over time it should, hopefully.
Yeah, and, you know, what else can we attribute it to? I mean, obviously there's some sort of intelligence that's there that we can't physically see, and, you know, there's been so many different EVPs that have mm-hmm. been captured by so many different people. You know, I mean, I've captured them myself, and they're interactive, mm-hmm. they're commenting,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
they're asking for help, they're, you know, different things. So it would seem to
exactly.
seem set. Now, I know, you know, let me ask you this. Have you had any other experiences mm-hmm. that you want to comment on that you, that would, you know, underpin or reinforce your EVP findings?
Personal, would you say, Doug, or?
I'm just giving you an opening if you want to talk about any other things.
Well, in a sense that, you know, because we're involved in this world of looking at consciousness surviving, yeah, definitely. I mean, not nearly be a year now that when my father passed, and as I said, I'm not a psychic. I've never had those wonderful gifts or been able to, you know, bring those on. And I was one day in our bathroom, and I was actually taking out washing and doing usual bits and pieces, housework and that, and I looked up, and there I saw my father come through a wall, walk past me, smile, and walk straight through the next wall. He was alive, but he died the next morning.
And
we lived 6 hours, right? 6 hours apart.
Right, but he had fallen into unconsciousness, right?
He had fallen into unconsciousness. He was in the process, he was in the death transition. And then we got the phone call 6 o'clock the next morning from the hospital saying that he's basically passed away. So it was almost a message in a sense. It was almost for me a confirmation that what you're doing, what is happening, here I am, because he knew, you know, very much about my EVP research, how much I was doing and what we were doing. And, it was one of those direct experience moments where you have to start to say, this is, we are surviving our consciousness, we are moving forward. There is no death. There is only life after life. It's more a matter now of really looking at consciousness and becoming more aware of who we are and what we are, rather than the constant debate of do we live, do we not? We know we do.
Right.
It's just with our research and what's out there, we know we do. It's just a matter of moving forward with that.
But you were talking to me, you know, about how, using a scientific mindset, it was really hard to wrap your brain around this, right?
Yes. I have a very rational mind. That's the problem.
but
and you go through that constant struggle.
We'll talk about that a little bit, because I mean that's very real. I mean, inside of you, you're thinking, okay, what did I just see? You know, how can these EVPs be real?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think. That's probably why it took me the few weeks even to turn the recorder on, because, you know, damned if I do, damned if I don't is how I felt, in the sense that if I do get a voice capture that I could prove is not human in any stray radio signal, broadcast or anything, how does that change my life view? And if I don't get a voice capture, is anything really out there? So you will go through, and with a very rational mind, I ended up having to go through a very deep study of phonetics, articulation. That's the sort of area that I went into to start saying, well, okay, here's these captures. They're interesting, but how can I prove in any shape or form that they're not something made by the physical world? You know, because you can get distorted noise, you can get straight radio broadcast, you can get lots of different interference that could be taken as being a word or two or something along those lines. So we went into a very big research time of doing speech structure observations, and even those observations, looking at the phonetics, the way we speak, our articulation, that started to show us information that was saying that this is not made by a human vocal system. And then my rational mind had to really sort of say, okay, start letting go and start working with what you got, because we were finding so many, even with the hurt structure of the voices, they would be condensed into one line, and we'd be thinking, well, the human voice can't do this. It's got harmonics. These weren't. They were constricted into one hertz level. So So it was really interesting to go through this, would you say, battle,
yeah.
mind battle,
sure.
with yourself, and it tests your beliefs too. It really, and that can be a big crunch for a lot of people, and it was for me.
Here's one last question from the chat room. Kathy, how do you know if you've picked up on stray radio signals as opposed mm-hmm. to EVPs?
You'll find there's a big difference between the two. Stray radio signals are human voice. Most of the time you can pick up things. It's more what EVPs are not. EVPs don't have any of your usual speech, common quirks of speech, which a radio signal, you know, you're picking up someone off a radio or a commercial, or even if you're picking up conversations between two people, you can tell it's two people or one person. But with EVPs, they've got very particular oddities, constriction of sound. They have no human quirks. They have no errors of speech, you know, like ers that we do. They are very much back-to-back. They show no breath, no articulation, no slurring, no saliva sounds as we talk. So it's more a case of distinguishing exactly what makes an EVP an EVP. So I know that's a bit of a long-winded answer.
No, good answer. You know, and that's
but
true. They have their own cadence.
Yeah, they don't cough. They don't clear their throat. There's no...
No belching.
No. And these are silly things, but these things are consistent with EVP. There's no lip sounds, no nasal sounds, no dry mouth sounds. They make no errors, miscalculations or blunders in their speech. They're often very low level, you might say, almost whispery. So there's a lot of, but you've got the whisper, but you don't have the human articulation characteristics of a whisper.
Right.
So it's more sort of, I know a lot of people say it could be stray radio signal, but then you have to turn around and say, well, hold on, we've got all these oddities of this speech. It's not a human living being. It's not coming from human vocal cords.
And you can tell a radio signal. You can tell what's radio and what's not. And that's the whole thing once you get doing it. Well, Ingrid, fascinating study and research and experiences you've had. And thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Oh, pleasure.
Today for you, it's like noon, almost about 12:30 tomorrow for you. Hey, we're talking to Ingrid in the future.
You are, yes. It's 12 o'clock on Monday.
Transversing time.
You are.
So anyway, thanks so much, Ing. It was just great to have you back and share
some of your experience.
My pleasure. We'll maybe ask you to come back someday when you get something really cool again.
Okay, that sounds great.
All right, you have a great day, Ing. Thanks so much.
I will. Thank you.
Good night.
Bye, everyone.
Bye-bye. And if you want to learn a little bit more of some of Dr. Ingrid Irwin's comments and thoughts about EVP, I feature those in the Metaphysics Doctoral Degree Program on Metaphysics Institute in Course 23, which is on evidence review and includes EVP research and some of Dr. Ingrid's different thoughts on that. So, interesting stuff, Vicki.
I am, you know, I'm just sitting here in awe. I must say to you, Doug, my thought was, I've been waiting 40 years for this. You know, we had Mark L. Cowden on not too long ago, hearing Ingrid speak my language. It's very exciting for me. It just warms my heart. I can't even begin to express it.
Yeah, it's she's gotten some interesting stuff and had some interesting experiences, and that's why I knew I wanted to get her on. But it was really, because I was talking to her a couple of weeks ago, and she was telling me how she got into it through consciousness studies, and I'm thinking, wow, how did I miss that one before? You know, Ingrid, I've known her for several years now, and so it was great to learn that. And what really impressed me is just how much you have to wrap you have to think differently about this stuff. And that's what I've talked about in previous shows too. You know, we can't come up with objective proof of this stuff, you know, like a scientist would, like we can with other things. So what we have to do is come up with a logically defensible conclusion. And that's what she's come up with, is something that, okay, what is it? Well, we can't explain it any other way. Therefore, we have to start thinking about what could it be. And so obviously.
Well, you see, and she defends everything I've been saying all my life. So it's, you know, there is something to be said for, you know, the future and the time that we're living in now, that we can do this. I had a thought about my old mentor, who bless her heart, passed in 79, who, you know, it would just be joyous wherever she is to hear people recording what she always knew was her reality and what I have known as my reality. And it's very exciting to see this kind of research actually getting some kind of credibility. So
well,
thank you, Ingrid.
And she brings so much credibility to it, to the study. It's not, it's her research is hardcore compared to, you know, so many other groups that are out there. So she really does a great job. All right, so we're going to continue on with our program. We're going to just take a moment here to send out some positive energy to those who might be in need, having a difficult time. It could be yourself, so join with me and just send it out. You know, it's sometimes the best thing we can do, send out good wishes, goodwill, gratitude, and positive energy to those in the world and all over the world. Just blanket it. And then what we're going to do next is we're going to invite Camille Edwards, Living Free, to join us. And then after that, we're going to get into Dr. Vicky.
Back with Dr. Vicky and Doug.
Yeah.
Dr. Doug.
Take it away, Vicky.
Yeah. And ladies and gentlemen, for this Sunday, Sunday's show with Reverend Camille Edwards is Living Free.
Thank you, Vicky. Hello, and welcome to the Living Free. Tonight, we are discussing simple remedies for cold and flu. I will answer any questions via email at a time, which have been posted. These are time-honored remedies passed down from generation to generation and now are being scientifically proven to be effective. First, we will explore the differences in flus and colds. Influenza. Various contagious viral respiratory illnesses characterized by 1. High fever, headache, extreme tiredness, dry cough, sore throat, runny or stuffy nose, and muscle aches. Colds. Again, various contagious respiratory illnesses caused by rhinoviruses and parainfluenza influenza viruses, HPIVs, accompanied by inflammation of the mucous membranes, fever, chills, coughing, and sneezing. Colds share most symptoms with the flu, but are usually milder and result in fewer complications. People with colds are more likely to have a runny or stuffy nose. Colds and flus are caused by viruses. They enter our bodies through our nose, eyes, and sometimes mouth. From there, they make their way into our sinuses, where they settle in to do damage. You've heard sayings such as, you're all wet, you will catch your death or cold, or keep your head and feet warm, or you will catch cold. Well, technically, yes and no. You won't catch cold or flu from getting wet and cold, but you are setting yourself up for wearing down the defenses that keep you well.
Hey, Camille.
Keeping your feet warm during cold weather will protect your sinus cavities. So it is very important to keep your feet warm. The reason for... Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, you. I don't know if everybody else is hearing it, but we have the Skype thing going on. You were breaking up just a bit, so let's just give it a second, Camille, and I'll let you kick back into it. Sometimes the Skype gods don't always smile on us, Camille.
I'd really like to know more about keeping the feet warm and some of those little myths that Camille was talking about. That piqued my interest.
Could you repeat that part of it, Camille? I'm not sure if we've might need to remake the connection. Camille, if you're hearing us, we're not hearing you, so I'm going to call you right back and we'll establish a new connection.
Well, and let's just carry on here while Doug tries to make another connection. Anybody, just to remind them that you can phone in The number is up there at the top of that Blog Talk Radio screen, 714-459-3973. Of course, if you're signed in to the chat room, you can certainly ask your questions or anything, any comments you might have for that matter, and we'd be happy to hear from you. And besides, you can tell us how our new format is working for you also. So how are we doing there now, Doug?
I'm working on getting Camille back. I'm not sure if she lost her connection or not. I don't know what it is. We went so long
we were doing great.
Without any issues. I mean, wow. I mean, we had those a long time ago, but on Paranexus Universe, but
well, maybe for a moment, if we'll try and get Camille back.
I think we have her back.
Okay, can you hear me?
Oh,
all right.
There she is.
I am back.
Cool. You sound good too. So if you'll pick it up a little bit before you on the
warm feet.
Yeah, the warm feet.
And feet. Okay.
The myths of what to do with a cold.
Well, you've heard that you're all wet and you will catch a death of cold. Well, you don't catch it from getting wet and cold, but you are setting yourself up for wearing down your defenses that keep you well. Keeping your feet warm during cold weather will protect your sinus cavities, so it is very important to keep your feet warm. The reason for that is that the nose walls react to cold feet. When the feet are cold, the walls of the nose contract, becoming cold and dry, so that dust and bacteria are no longer being effectively filtered out, thus setting the stage for a runny nose, cold, or worse, the flu. So, getting cold feet does set the groundwork for getting sick, but it doesn't give you those germs. With that information, we move on to herbal remedies, and we're going to start with the root remedies. We will start with garlic. That is the simple type that you buy in the grocery store produce section or from your local farmer's market. It is best to buy it in its natural state. Do not buy the already peeled, crushed assortment that you will be tempted to purchase. Buy it with the skin intact. Garlic is a natural antibiotic. Garlic has antiviral, antibiotic, and antifungal properties. Eating 4 to 5 fresh cloves is roughly the equivalent of taking a shot of penicillin, so I've been told. It is best eaten raw. One trick is getting down raw garlic. You have peeled the skin at this point. Is chopping the 3 to 5 cloves, sprinkling with a touch of cayenne pepper, and topping with raw honey. The other, so I'm told, is swallowing the cloves whole. Personally, I can't do that. I would choke. If you can't handle the raw garlic, try adding a lot more garlic to your meals, cooking it only lightly. Another trick to fighting cold or flu with sore throat is the simple act of cutting an onion, depending on the bacteria that's involved. An acquaintance and teacher of mine, Dr. James A. Duke, famous ethnobotanist and author of over 36 books, sent me an email with the scientific information included validating that the simple act of inhaling the aroma of a fresh peeled onion can reduce the length of time of illness should you have strep throat. He recommended setting a cut onion on the bedstand next to the person who has strep throat. That is why it is best to eat an onion immediately once cut, because onions can and do absorb bacteria from the air around us and instantly starts this process once cut. So, eat up. Another remedy involving onions is to slice a large onion, add it to a saucepan, cover it with honey, and simmer on very low heat, an hour or so until the onions are caramelized. You don't want to really cook it, just caramelize those onions. Remove from the heat, cool and strain. Take a teaspoon to tablespoon as needed for sore throat and cough. Take as much as you need. You will not overdose on this. The next root is horseradish. Just a simple act of cutting and smelling fresh horseradish will immediately open up your sinuses. For the brave of heart, a tablespoon of fresh chopped horseradish will do wonders for heavy congestion. You can try softening the effect with honey. You can try. And chew well before swallowing. For some reason, they want you to chew that before you swallow it. I haven't been able to do it. With honey, always try your best to buy local honey that is raw in nature or only lighted heated to remove from the comb. Your honey sold in the grocer are usually pasteurized, heated to a certain temperature, and basically ineffective as a medicinal remedy. Now, ginger root is also effective as a cold and flu remedy. In simple tea form, In simple tea form, With honey for sweetener, ginger root offers a touch of spice to warm up the toes. Also, you can slice the ginger root, add honey to cover, add water and several orange slices. You heat. Once it starts to boil, turn it down immediately. Don't let it keep boiling. And simmer until condensed, thickened, about 30 minutes or so. Two things you can do. Drink as is or add seltzer or water and make homemade ginger ale. It is delicious. Ginger root has been proven to work more effectively than prescription strength Dramamine for motion sickness and does wonder to cure nausea. I wish I had known this when I went on a tropical cruise for 5 days. The Dramamine knocked me unconscious and I missed most of the cruise. Remember, ginger root also warms. Next week, we will continue this segment and discuss the serious flus and viruses like you see in the movies. What herbal remedies, if any, are there? This has been Living Free with Camille Edwards. Live well, live free. Good night.
Next week for another interesting topic on Living Free with Camille Edwards. MCHS does not intend to prescribe, recommend, or otherwise treat illnesses or afflictions. If you're ill, please see your medical practitioner for a diagnosis and any medicinal prescriptions, doses, or treatments. It's been reported that some herbs may interfere with surgery. If you're currently on any medication or herbal products, please advise your doctor or dentist at first point of contact.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Dr. Vicki, Dr. Vicki's Psychic Perspective. This is a fabulous show. I really enjoy this new format. That I don't know what I want to talk about first, Doug. EVPs or garlic, and garlic to keep the vampires away and get more EVPs. I don't know.
Everybody
I'm excited.
Else. The vampires and everybody. The zombies,
yeah.
The humans. Absolutely. Maybe even the spirits will stay away.
Well, you know, in my world, this is, you know, what Ingrid was talking about. And thank you again, Ingrid, for joining us. Fabulous stuff. In my world, this is pretty natural. For me, this is, you know, talking to dead folk. Because it's just natural. It doesn't always happen. I don't always know their names. I don't even ask them, for that matter. But it's just a natural course. And I think, I have a theory. Doug, I want to run a theory by you. You ready for a theory?
I'm ready.
All right. I think at birth, you know, it's proven we're born sensory beings before we're anything else. You know, and then, of course, the five senses are there. But we're also sensory beings. And I think as children are raised, you know, we're all taught, even, God, you know, right from day one, is what to focus on. Focus on mommy and daddy and the bottle and the hand and, you know, the smiling. And I think that our focus is shifted into a more physical reality. When I think that there's all these multiple layers going on, I've often looked at a baby and thought, wow, they're out there traveling somewhere. You know, it's like they're looking off into space and just traveling around. And I think, wow, I wonder when, you know, and they sleep and they're out there and I wonder when they're going to come back. You know, and what could they tell us? If they could speak, what could they tell us? So here I'm thinking that this is really perfectly natural, but as we ground into this physical reality, it's kind of educated out of us. That's what I think. I
mean, definitely.
Going to the optometrist, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate, if you've gone to the ophthalmologist, if that's the correct term, and they put all those little windows in front of your eyes, you know, those little, you know, slide glass things to see. see, you know, what's going to fit your eyes and what you can see best with. And you always get that one or two little slideshows where there's all these tingly, like these twinkly things, these colored little spots and dabs. You've had that, Doug? You know, where they...
No, but I've been taking my meds, Vicki.
You can see that, and I've asked the ophthalmologist about that. I say, oh, wait, stop there. What is that? I guess the, another way to say is when people start to get a migraine and you get that little washy eye where it starts to, you know, the light starts to burn a little bit and you get little lines in your eyes. Mm-hmm. It feels like there's water in your eyes. You can't see straight. And I've been told by a couple of ophthalmologists that our brain filters this out. These little particles or little light particles are in the air all the time. But our brain filters out information it doesn't need.
Right.
And that takes me into another line of thinking. You know, in hypnosis, you can do regression to remember the time on a clock when you were walking down that mall, for instance, because the brain is taking in that info. It's just filed, and we filter out what we don't, what we think is kind of useless. But it's there. So in hypnosis and regression, you can go back and, well, can you describe the offender? You know, what did he look like? You know, that kind of thing. So I think that there's a lot of things that we could naturally see if our focus weren't otherwise. That's my theory.
Well, and definitely.
So when we get these audio recordings, that takes me into another line of thinking that, you see, I can hear things, but they're in my head. You know, there's sometimes you can look at somebody and say, did you hear that? Oh, did you hear that? And, you know, you're listening for a sound, you want it to repeat, and it's like it didn't, but it wasn't earthly. It's kind of like something was happening in the kitchen or something fell, but nobody was there. And so I think that those are a physicality, but usually when I'm hearing spirits in my head, it's a different kind of, it's not an external audio, it's an internal audio. So, you know, that kind of, at least that's how I've always translated that.
Makes
so
sense.
So when they can actually record my internal audio, that takes me into a whole line of very confused thinking, Doug. But it excites me.
And that's what I'm trying to tell you. Take your meds and you won't have this.
Oh, they've tried that.
You know, I've had the whole thing, you know, the frontal lobotomy, the shock treatment, the whole thing. That was still there.
Oh, man. You know, and that's very true. Back, I think it was in the late 70s, early 80s, you know, I had gone through a particularly difficult time, and I went to this psychiatrist, and I said, look, in my reality, this is what happens. And the first thing he did is grab his prescription pad. I said, no, I don't need meds. Of course, then, because I refuse these things, I think, oh, no, there's another one walking the streets, you know. But you see, this to me, this is where I get into my fascination, my absolute fascination with natural experience. And then to distinguish between what's natural and conditioned. You know, because we are conditioned into a belief system. We're conditioned into this reality. And in my life, but more in the past 20 years, my focus has been more about natural laws and principles. Well, you know, what then, natural laws in relation to what? Well, my journey took me into understanding that there's, you know, four basic bodies of law. The earth law, because we're all here in a body, and earth has its own governing bodies. And then there's a natural law, how ebbs and tides and cause and effect and so on. Then we have a spiritual body, that spiritual, those other realms, so to speak. And then the universal laws. And having spent a fair amount of my time in quote, end quote, and forgive me for anybody if this isn't a politically correct term, but my time in Indian country, finding that a lot of indigenous cultures also go by these four bodies of law. You know, there's the, again, earth, natural, spiritual, and universal. And one without the other, it's like everything working together into one body of law. So there is we are governed by one body of law, but there's all these varying levels or degrees within that. And my thing was natural. What's, you know, because you have to observe spiritual, because, I mean, that's a good part of my life experience. But then watching the earth and nature, and then understanding these natural flows, ebbs, you know, and tides of life. And, of course, then in my mind, saying, okay, the universal principles such as the laws of law of attraction and magnetism, as they would say, so that there's energy flowing in and out of all of these bodies of law, so it's universal. Well, in my focus of natural law and natural laws and learning, I came up with a program that I believe, and in my experience with people, it kind of turns light bulbs on and helps to change people's lives, because it certainly began to help me to best make sense of what is natural. As I was saying earlier, that, you know, babies are born sensory. Now, I don't know all the answers as we go here, except that, because I have a lot of theories and speculations, but if we are natural sensory beings and we're born that way, then we eventually adapt or adopt into emotional feelings, and we often get that confused. But nonetheless, we have this emotional body, but we have a sensory body, and then we have this capability to learn a language that we start thinking in the language, and then we're always making decisions based on that. Generalized psychology would say, you know, feel, think, and do. And what I did is I developed a program, and which we're getting to here in a moment between Doug and I, of a program of sense, feel, think, and do. As adults, it's very difficult to reach in to find out what's my sensory perception of things. So it's like more about dealing with your emotional body first. So it's, how do I feel? Now, can I access my senses? Like, what are my sensory perceptions of things? And then you've got copious amounts more of information to think about and to make decisions. So that's the program that, you know, an investigative but also experiential that, you know, I developed over these years. God, I taught this to kids and light bulbs go on, you know, and even adults, and helping better to manage with their children. When you incorporate that, we restore empathy, that's for certain. And in another way, if parents are so inclined, it keeps that line of communication open to possible other worlds. You know, that which is a little bit different when we talk about the psychic world versus an auto-sensory world. Now, people who might be interested in this, I think it's fascinating, that mm-hmm. front part of the brain is got this, it's the front cortex, the ventral medial prefrontal cortex, to be exact, actually has the sensory sense. It's not to be confused with the pineal gland, everyone, which is right kind of smack in the middle of the brain, straight down from the soft spot on top of your head, you know, quarter section through. This is the front part of the brain, and a lot of cultures, religions, and people talk about that third eye. There is this distinction between the third eye versus the pineal gland. So that front part of the brain is kind of like our bat radar. You know, we can gauge space with it. We can feel space. We can sense energy. We can feel.
And that's what you use to pick up a vibe, right?
Absolutely.
A vibe about somebody.
And the way I make this distinction between an auto-sensory perception versus an intuition is one I could logically defend. You like this part, Doug. The part that I can logically defend to be in a physical explanation versus I got no explanation at all. So if I'm getting ready to go out this evening and I have an event to go to and I'm getting ready and I have a feeling about something that night, that's an intuition. To me, that's a psychic thing because there's a time-space kind of bend here. There's nothing in my physical environment that's going to tell you, oh, something is going to happen tonight. So when I get to the event, then I say, oh, I got a feeling here. Well, I can find a logic to that. The logic would say that you have a radar, and your radar is saying there's something in this environment that you're detecting. Now, this is a whole discussion in itself,
mm-hmm.
but it makes sense to me that we all have some kind of varying degree of radar. And I think we're all built with it. I think it's a natural phenomenon. There is some science to back it up. To what degree are we going to say it's parapsychology? Well, that's another discussion.
I mean, because, you know, it's something we experience, all of us. We all pick up on a vibe. We all can sense things about a situation or pick up on energy of a room or, you know, the energy of somebody. I mean, we all probably know somebody who puts out a negative energy, you know, or a positive energy. We pick up
Absolutely.
On that.
Well, and I think this explains what the mentalists do.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is the distinction between what the mentalists have an experience with. They're high sensory perceivers. Wow. Whereas somebody who is psychic, and being psychic largely is, it's the emotional body that inspires that phenomenon of being intuitive, of we have this instinctual mechanism in us that why would I need to know that? You know, I think as we evolve, we expand our consciousness, and we can randomly tune into meaningless things. I do all the time.
Even without a TV.
I do so. But it's a wonderful conversation. The course will be up in the next 2 weeks with IMHS.
Yeah, it's course 7-1, and it's natural laws.
And learning.
And learning. And
in there we discuss autosensory perception, the individuality, and, of course, the four steps. And I'm looking forward to it being a great addition to IMHS. And, hopefully some folks, we got some people signed up already. So I'm looking forward to it, Doug. It's a great partnership. And I think in many ways, I think that the research in the future is going to support my work and my work support their work. And there's many of us in this field expanding our awareness. So it's exciting.
So if you happen to be a Metaphysics Institute student listening to this, you can elect Course 7-1 on Natural Laws and Learning if you so choose. Plus, you have another course coming up here in a couple of months or so on Native American spirituality that we're looking forward to.
I am so. And I'll talk about lots of things like the four laws and just an overview and understanding that, the Red Nations cultures and doing somewhat of a comparative of indigenous cultures too,
mm-hmm.
because there are universal symbols all over the place. And it's an exciting course for me to write. I'm looking forward to it. And I'm looking forward to next week, Doug. This is great.
Yeah, it's. I think it's worked out really nicely. And next week I'm going to be talking about futility. And I just happened to think of that before we closed up here. But I'll be posting what the topics will be for next
and
week.
And I'm...
Go ahead.
Doug, I can't help it. I'm going to talk about ghosts next week.
Ghosts, okay.
Ghosts. I want to talk about spirits and ghosts.
All right.
And anybody who has, we're just going to, carry some of this right along. Anybody who has some stories or questions and such, we're going to do that next week. So everyone, please send white light to everyone, others you don't. Have a great week. And thank you so much for joining us again.
Yeah, and thanks to John Hightower for being there in the background. And
Camille Edwards,
mm-hmm.
and Ingrid Irwin. She's
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Yep.
I'm really glad to meet her. Thank you very much.
Thanks to those who joined us live tonight as well, and those on the archive. See you next week.
Good night, everyone.